Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Through this next hour, I hope you can stick around. We are going to be talking about money. So whether you've got a little of it or you've got a lot of it, you will be encouraged and enlarged in our conversation. Our guest through this coming hour says most of us know that to lose weight, we simply eat less and exercise more. What sounds like common sense has become a billion-dollar weight loss industry. Well, he says the same principle applies to getting into shape financially as a matter of spending less than we earn and investing the rest. So why are we not all in great financial shape? Well, Darren Lordenback is the author, presenter, speaker, trainer, ex-financial planner and company director. We're going to talk about some of the issues that he's raised in his brand new book called God's Money Matters, Biblical Keys to Financial Freedom and the Art of Mind Over Money. It's just been released with proceeds going to Compassion. And so what a pleasure it is to welcome back to 2020 Darren Lordenback. Hello, Darren. Welcome.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me again.
Well, Darren, let me just say congratulations. You're the founder of God's Money Matters, and this book that you have just released is entitled God's Money Matters, Biblical Keys to Financial Freedom and the Art of Mind Over Money. Let me just ask you before we get this conversation really into full swing, the art of mind over money. This is a big challenge, isn't it?
It is, it is. We, our human behaviours are quite a funny thing. We're a little bit predictable, but we're irrational. So we're a bit strange, us humans.
Okay. Well, we want to talk a little about this irrationality this morning and invite listeners to join into our conversation. And you might have your own thoughts. Our talkback line open on 1-800-316-316. We'll take some calls a little earlier, and you can help direct our conversation today. So insights, thoughts, questions about money issues. And when you hear of those issues like biblical keys, financial freedom, the art of mind over money, give us a call, 1-800-316-316. It is a special congratulations on the book, and you're using the book for a special reason too. Proceeds going to Compassion, one of your favourite charities, no doubt, Darren.
Yeah, certainly, Neil, it is. Compassion is something that I'm very passionate about. I've had the blessing of being able to visit two of my Compassion children and over the years, and it's been an incredible blessing to us, and we just really love the work that Compassion do. And, yeah, we just love the fact that we can spend a little bit of time writing letters and a little bit of our money supporting them, and it brings a big opportunity to bring children into God's kingdom.
And I've looked through the book, and as I run my eye down the table of contents, you're covering a lot of very practical issues. We're going to talk about some of those today, and some of those you've written about in a creative way. Is there a favourite part of this book for you, Darren? Is there something that, as you think of, you know, having written the book and you've put down on paper some of this financial wisdom that you've gained over now a number of decades, is there something special that that really is outstanding for you?
Well, I think there's probably two things, Neil. There's probably the most significant thing I found in my career as a financial planner is the bank account structure is one of the most significant things that we can do in getting our finances in order, which is kind of strange because it's one of the most simplest things we can do. And as a financial planner who's been highly trained over many years and you know, spend hours and hours on education, we come back to some of the very basic things. So that's one thing. And I think the other side to it is where I see people who have put their faith in God and start running their money as if it's God's and they're just a steward of it, just the blessings that those people see. And that's been really exciting to see over the years.
Okay, well, there's great wisdom in just raising those couple of points. Why don't we start with those? Why don't we talk about personal and family bank accounts? And you might be able to shed some wisdom on whether this is the same for people who are in business or partnerships or however they're managing finances. But we'll keep the focus on a personal and family finances. So bank accounts, what's the biggest problem that you have come across over the years in such a long association with this? Where do we mostly go wrong with our bank accounts?
Yeah, it's interesting because what I think most people focus on is the mathematics. And so they go for mathematics over over practicality in some ways. And so a lot of people think, well, if I have one bank account, then I get the most interest in that bank account because it gets me over certain limits that might be there, or thresholds for bearing interest. And, you know, it's simple because it's one account and I won't pay any fees. And they go into all this mathematics. Whereas what we found, and we found it anecdotally in our financial planning practice, but what we've since discovered is there's research around this where it says that those who have multiple bank accounts with different purposes behind those bank accounts are more financially successful than those who have one single bank account. And that's exactly what we found.
Okay, so so even though you might pay a little more in bank fees, having extra bank accounts may actually be to your benefit.
That's right. I mean, the discipline and the structure of that is very, very helpful for us in managing our finances, and just understanding what's the purpose behind each bank account means that we can be a little bit more intentional about how we use the money in our accounts.
What about the bank's attitude to all of that? I mean, do they want people to have a useful, strategic way of using their bank accounts? Is there any sort of conspiracy against families, or are the banks actually trying to help us?
Well, on the whole, I think the banks are actually trying to help us, which is a strange thing for me to say sometimes. I'm not against banks, but I think sometimes we can be manipulated in some ways by them. But the banks don't seem to be against that at all, and they actually seem to be quite helpful with some of the online banking options we now have, which are low fees, if any fees, and the high interest on these online bank accounts. So they actually do help us. They also help us with some offset accounts where mathematics does come back into it. But, yeah, the offset accounts on mortgages and things like that can be quite helpful.
And the typical family, I mean, every family is different, and some families are running business and all sorts of different dimensions to what they do. But is there an ideal family banking system that you like to promote?
Yeah, for those people in business, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, Neil, because I think it's something that is a problem for a lot of people in small business is that they mix their small business banking and their business banking with their home banking. And again, they think they're getting an advantage with mathematics. They think by putting GST funds aside against a mortgage or something like that is helpful. But it actually proves not to be. And the little wins they get in tend to be only a few dollars a year, whereas what it does is it actually messes up their banking quite a lot. And they never really know where they're at. And I think the Bible actually tells us that we should know where we're at in one stage. And it says that we should know the state of our flocks. And in today's terms, our flocks is our finances, because that's exactly what it was back then.
Okay, so keeping any business transactions separate from your personal family transactions is an advantage. When does all of this begin and give us the most benefit? I'm just reflecting on a long time ago when I first got married, and my wife and I, we started a joint bank account, and our finances all went into one. But I've appreciated over the years that somehow or other, when young couples marry, they don't actually do that so much anymore, and they've got separate bank accounts. How do you reflect some wisdom on that for people with all sorts of different varieties of ways that they do their bank accounts?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think you know, each family is different. You're quite right with this. But what I've found that works very, very well over the years is that if you're going to get married, you bring your banking together. Gosh, you're married in bringing yourselves together, and the two shall become one in so many ways. Why not with your finances? And I think just beforehand, we heard some people talking about on the show the fact that you shouldn't have anything hidden from your spouse. And I think that that's a good thing. The only exception I'd say with that, so I believe in joint bank accounts and a number of them, but I do believe also in one individual account each. Now, we can talk a little bit more through that, but I believe that a certain amount of money should be put into that individual bank account every week or fortnight or pay period, and then that money can be spent freely without the other person in the other partner understanding or knowing what's been going on in that. So the amount that goes in there is known, but what is spent on is not known. And I think that that just gives some spontaneity and some freedom within the marriage.
Is that a personal privacy thing? Some people might say, we should know about every cent that our spouse spends. You're saying that there's a little bit of, it gives you a certain level of freedom as an individual if you feel as though that's money that you can spend on personal items.
That's right. I think because the amount that's going into that account has been agreed upon by the couple. So we know that that's money that's going to be spent on something. And I think then the freedom to be able to spend that, for example, and it's my 25th wedding anniversary today, if I wanted to go and buy my wife a gift, I could buy it out of that account and she wouldn't know that I've bought it. So the surprise wouldn't be spoiled by her looking into the bank account before I actually get to deliver the gift. So it's not just about having some freedom for my own spending, but it may be also an opportunity to be able to give surprises and do some nice things with that money. So it has a variety of good uses, and I think that freedom is quite nice.
But there's no saying that she won't go rummaging through your bank statements and find out exactly how much you did spend on that ring.
That's right.
So are you serious? Is it your wedding anniversary today, or was that just an illustration?
No, it is my 25th wedding anniversary today.
Well, let me just say, congratulations. Silver anniversary. And the fact that it's falling right in the middle of marriage week, and as we get to talk about bank accounts, and as you even say, part of being one flesh even can include the way that you actually do your banking together. Congratulations from all of our listeners all around Australia. Just wonderful news to hear of a 25th wedding anniversary. Wonderful stuff.
Yeah, thank you, Neil. It's very apt, isn't it, this week? But I was having a smile to myself about that just earlier on. Yeah.
Yes. Well, 1-800-316-316. You might like to join in our conversation today. We'll do a conversation about more than just bank accounts, but you might have your own reflection on how banking has worked for you in your marriage and family situation. 1-800-316-316. Let's take a call from Anne in Labrador. Hello, Anne. Welcome along.
Hello. How are you?
Thank I'm
you
very well, program. Anne.
Thank you for your program and stuff, but my main aim is that if you tie and do and then also put some money towards the some other thing as well, that then the Lord will look after you in all sorts of ways. But bank cards, I do not do bank cards because they can be a trap. Unless you really have to have one, you have to pay off, you know, when you use it, because you don't know sometimes how much money that you have used and put on there. So I think cash is the best way to go. And if you can't afford it, then just put a cash away somewhere and pay it when you can.
I think we're getting into the art of mind over money here. Your thoughts for Anne, Darren?
Yeah, I think Anne's onto something here. I'm totally with her. Credit cards is not part of the banking structure that I recommend. In fact, one of the things that we did in our financial planning practice all the time was help people get off credit cards and get off that dependency. The point system has been refuted as a scam, and so that's not an excuse. A lot of people say that they pay off their credit cards every month. The evidence is they don't. And the other interesting thing is that Dun & Bradstreet have done research on this, and they said that people with a credit card spend between 12 and 18% more than those who don't have a credit card. So I'm with you, Anne. I think cash is a great thing. I also agree with you that the tithing and giving is something that we should do. It's a practical way in which we can show our faith and love for God. So good on you, Anne.
What I have is from the post office. It can be used like a credit card in some ways. It's called a load and go card, and it is a Visa card, and you put money on it. So you can pay stuff in that often on like online, or even I do it when I sponsor Vision Radio when they have a radio call. I've done used that.
And I think you're talking about what is equivalent to a debit card. Is that
it's something equivalent to a debit card, but it's also it's got Visa on it.
Yep. Yeah. Darren, your thoughts for that style of card?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they are actually great. I use Visa debit, so I I'm a big fan of the debit card, and I think that for buying online and for other transactions, it's certainly very helpful. You know, we do live in a modern world, and cash is not always practical. As much as it's kind of psychologically, cash is the best tool we can use for money, money management. But where we need to use a card, a Visa debit card, well, that kind of debit card, MasterCard debit, is a good thing.
Visions 2020 with Neil Johnson. A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events.
Darren Lordenback is our guest. We're talking about demystifying personal finances, the art of mind over money, and Darren's new book, God's Money Matters. 1-800-316-316. If you'd like to join in our conversation today, you might have a question or a scenario that you'd like to run by Darren. Darren, we'll move off these bank accounts in just a short while, but before we do, the types of bank accounts that you might set up for your marriage and for your family finances, they can be quite sophisticated, but how would you structure those bank accounts to get maximum benefit from them?
Yes, Neil, I think the overall focus should be where we have lumpy bills or we might have high expenses in a particular area, that's not a bad area to put a separate bank account. So I'll give you some examples that I use. I believe in having an emergency fund. I think that it's reasonable for us to expect that there might be an emergency coming to our life at some stage. We won't know what they are, but hence the idea of an emergency. It's a bit of a surprise, and so it's something that can't be necessarily budgeted for. But if we can put some funds away, then that keeps us a little bit safer. And so we recommend normally about 3 months worth of expenses, so the family expenses, about 3 months worth of that in that account, and that can just sit into a mortgage offset account if people have mortgage. That's where we do use the mathematics, and it's an advantage. Another fund that I like is a holiday fund. It's good for us to take a holiday at times, and it's those wonderful times spent with family. I think when I was growing up as a child, those most memorable times were holiday times. And so we have a holiday fund. We have a car fund that deals with tyres, registration, insurance. So we just put a little bit of money away into that every week. And at some stage, we may want to upgrade our car. And so some funds go into that account for that purpose. If there's any home maintenance or renovations. And then we have another one, which is investments and extra giving.
And does it make it easier, do you think, when you've got all of those different offset accounts to actually keep your budget to the forefront of your thinking? Because when we're talking about the art of mind over money, if you actually know where the budget's calculations that you made when you were doing up your budget, you know, sitting down or going away for a weekend and saying, we've got to get our finances in order. So you come up with a budget and you find out usually that sometimes you're spending more than you're actually earning and all of those sorts of fun things. But when you're actually setting it all out, does these offset account ideas, do they actually help it make it easier to actually function with your budget?
It certainly does, Neil. And what it means is that you know where you're spending money from. I might give you an example. When the Philippines had then this is very relevant at the moment, had cyclones and storms go through a number of years ago, my wife and I were both at work, and so I just sent her a quick email saying, "Hey, honey, I think we should give some money to this hurricane appeal that Compassion had for the kids," and we had a child near that area, and so that was particularly on our heart. And my wife wrote back and said, "Yep, I think we should." And then I wrote back, she wrote back, "Oh, how much do you think?" And I wrote an amount, and she agreed that was the amount that we should put away, or we should send off. And then the very wise question came next: from which account? And the good thing is we had some money in our holiday account, we had some money in our car account, and I said, "Well, we don't need a holiday at the moment, and we don't need to upgrade our car at the moment, so we can use one of those accounts." And so it was very easy for us to make that decision. We knew the sacrifice we were making, if you like. We were sacrificing, you know, maybe a little bit of holiday or a little bit of car. And so we could weigh up those choices and weigh up that decision and know that we weren't going to then leave ourselves in a situation that was financially unwise by making that that contribution.
So what you're saying is that when an emergency comes, if you've got a savings that's happening in those different accounts, it's not wrong to be able to take from those, but you actually recognise what you are sacrificing when you use that money to be part of another contingency, and if there's an emergency or something.
Exactly right. And so it makes it very clear about where, you know, what that money's been used for. And it doesn't then get you into trouble with some other bills. Like, a lot of people have lovely, beautiful, soft hearts for giving. And I think, you know, it is better to give than receive. And so we want to give and give. But then if we give to the point where we get giving what I would call possibly unwisely, then we can actually end up in a situation where we've given away some essential money that we owe for other people, the other people may be bills, electricity companies and the like. And then we end up being, you know, the ones in need or the ones who are financially in trouble. And I don't think that's wise. And I think God gives us, a brain to use, and this is one way that we can use it.
Darren, I've got a caller who left a message with a question. And just to encourage listeners, 1-800-316-316. If you'd like to join in our conversation, you might have a question or an insight into the art of mind over money and demystifying personal finances. But John from WA calls, left a message, said, is there a point in life, and he's talking about older people, when people who have not been financially smart in savings in the past, where the advice we're talking about today is not relevant? In other words, is there a point where you get old enough where you say, oh, all that stuff about budgeting doesn't matter anymore? I suspect that's what John's saying. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think if we go to the higher principle, we're going to be held to account for our lives. You know, when we face Jesus one day, we will be held to account for our lives. And I can't help but think that that has to be part of our financial life, will be part of that. And if we don't know where we're spending our money, and we don't know, well, God's money, let's be real. But if we don't know where we're spending the finances he's entrusted to us, then we're not really being good stewards. And so, therefore, I think it applies to everybody all the time. Now, I don't think we have to account for every single cent. I think that's going a bit too far. But I certainly think we have to be able to give account for the majority of our spending. The other thing is, you know, I don't think there's ever a bad time to set a plan in place for where we're going to spend the money that God's entrusted to us.
Okay, so you're never too old to actually enact these principles, because it's all about stewardship, and stewardship lasts our whole life, right up until the day we draw our last breath. So it's still important for older listeners today to be thinking about these issues of stewardship and money. Let's broach another topic here. And we can still continue to talk about that if listeners want to talk about these things, 1-800-316-316. But let's talk about debt, because somehow or other we need to have our debts in context. And debts for some is a nightmare. For others, it's a useful thing. How does the art of mind over money apply to issues of debt, Darren?
Yeah, debt in the Bible is talked about a lot, and it's particularly in Proverbs, and it does say we should run from debt like a gazelle runs from a hunter. That's pretty fast.
Yeah.
And it says, at one point Solomon says, if you've struck your hand in a debt, effectively, go and get that cleared up as soon as you can. Get out of it. You know, you put yourself into bondage. And, it is that, isn't it, really? I mean, people talk about good debt and bad debt, and I don't think there's such a thing as good debt. I think there's debt that can be utilized more effectively and more wisely than other debt. Credit card and consumer debt, I think, is incredibly unwise, and in some ways could be a lack of trust in God's provision. I think there's other debt that can be, if it's well managed, can actually be utilised for, you know, businesses and for investments. But I think it needs to be much more conservative than what our culture is teaching us at the moment.
Okay, Darren Lordenbach's our guest. Let's take another call, Darren. Misha is in Brisbane in Queensland. Hello, Misha. Welcome along.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. What are your thoughts, Misha?
Well, I got an inheritance from my dad, and I don't know whether to buy a unit or stay with where I am in an apartment. And that I sort of pay low rent and that, and I don't know whether to buy an apartment, and I'm not married, and I've been praying and getting people to pray for me to get a husband. I don't know whether to wait and keep the money until I get married or buy an apartment.
Okay, well, some thoughts from Darren.
Yeah, I think, Misha, thanks for the call, and I think it's a bigger question than probably what I can answer without knowing your full personal situation. But, buying property is not a bad thing. I would suggest that units don't necessarily go up in value over the long term because they don't have a land component, and they can cost you a bit of money with body corporates and other things. So if you're looking at buying property, I'd highly recommend you look at a small home or some kind of townhouse or something where it has some land component to the actual property and has low body corporate fees. But I think it's probably wise, given you've got received an inheritance, to go and see a qualified financial planner in your area. Possibly your friends could recommend one that they know, and get some proper advice.
At last hour, Darren, we were talking about issues to do with debt. And as we tie some loose ends together on the issue of debt, if we're talking about what kind of debt is reasonable, now just keeping in context that you were saying that, you can get some biblical proverbs that say, run from debt like a gazelle runs from a hunter, which is run pretty hard. But in most people's lives, we're going to be having some level of debt. So what's a reasonable level?
Yeah, a reasonable level is that which doesn't take us away from or strangle us and take us away from some of the things our family needs us to do and God needs us to do. So, for example, a good test is if God called us into ministry, would debt be the thing that stopped us from being able to take on that ministry? Would that be the thing that where we said, oh, no, we don't earn enough income, or we can't pay off our debt, or we don't have enough equity or ownership so that we could actually make some changes and adjustments?
Okay, I can hear you've got your little dog in the background there, but don't worry, we're not too distracted. So what you're saying is if you are serving God, and there is a desire in the hearts of Christian believers to serve God with our whole heart, if you're saying if your debt is keeping you from serving God in a capacity that will make a difference in the kingdom, then you've got too much debt. Is that what you're saying?
That's right, and that's where you've got to be very careful about how much debt you get into. See, it's very easy to get into debt these days, but it's not very easy to get out of it. And so it's a matter of how do we handle that? How do we get to a point where we, hopefully would own more than we owe at any one time, or that we have provisions in place to make sure that we're managing it as well as we can. And so therefore, for example, if we take on debt, that we have appropriate backup plan, where we can make sure that we can cover those debts at any one time. For example, if we get sick or disabled, how are we going to be able to pay those debts still? And so we just have to have a wise plan. As I say, it's very easy to get into debt these days, not so easy to get out of it. So we just have to be a bit smart.
A little sideline that comes up when you start to talk about these sorts of things, because I know that there'd be some who might be listening to the conversation saying, well, I'm not really serving God in ministry the way that the pastor at my church does. I'm not in ministry. I'm not really doing that. So really what you talk about with keeping that debt in context and being able to serve God and being free to do that maybe doesn't apply to me. But there is a sense, isn't there, that it's God's mission that we all serve, and we have a choice to actually be a part of God's mission. And it comes down to a personal responsibility that we might take. So we can serve in all sorts of different ways. And some ways we're serving with some financial support for those who might be doing some other things. So we are all a part of it. So money's a big part of how we serve God, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's certainly, and we can certainly serve God with our money, with those resources, I think John Wesley was a really wise guy when it comes to money. And even though he lived a long time ago, he really did live a great example on this. And his three principles on money was to gain all you can, so work hard and be smart and use the talents and gifts God's given you to be able to earn what you can. That you might then, number two, save all you can. That then, number three, for the purposes of giving all you can.
and he ended up giving away about 97% of everything he earned.
Okay, there's a big challenge in that for us, and that's what true leadership is, when people go before and they actually make those personal sacrifices financially to actually make those things happen. But for people, though, who are in the earning or in business, or, you know, you're an employee and you're looking towards retirement and you've got all sorts of things that you're juggling. It's like juggling a whole lot of balls. What am I going to do with these perhaps sometimes limited dollars that are coming in? Then actually putting some money aside or planning as part of the budget to be a part of serving God isn't in some people's thinking. So how do you actually make that adjustment? Is this one of those things where you've got this mind over money type idea?
Yeah. Well, I think the number one thing is we need to understand the concept of stewardship and the fact that all our money is God's. Like, God is the provider. Our employer may be the facilitator of our paycheck, but God is our provider. And he provides it all. He owns it all. And therefore, we're just stewards. And if we think about stewardship as far as in old England and how that worked, basically the king would have a steward who would look after all his wealth, distribute it in one way or another, would collect money in, pay money out, would manage that wealth on behalf of the king. Now, the steward didn't own any of it. They did benefit from some of it, so they got paid for their work and they did enjoy some of the benefits of that wealth, but they did not own it, and they were stewards of that money. And I think that's a very good concept for us to get. So if we get that first in our mind and we understand that it's all God, then everything flows better from there in our thinking.
Now, let's have a quick talk about what you have as a 30-day spending challenge. And I imagine that all of these different elements of what we do as Christian believers with finances comes to the fore when you're actually doing something that is defined and putting together a 30-day spending challenge. How does that work that you do?
Yeah, the reason the 30-day spending challenge came about is, as a financial planner, I'd sit down with my clients and try to work out a budget. And without exception, nearly, they'd come up with a large surplus in their budget. And if you know, they might have $10,000 or $15,000 a year or something like that, or maybe more, where they'd have this surplus in their budget. And I'd say, well, where's that money? And they'd say, well, we don't know, because surely it should have accumulated in a bank account or been paid off a mortgage or something. There should have been some account for it. And they said, well, we don't know where that money is. And so the 30-day spending challenge was kind of created from that, to say, well, we actually need to know the truth about our money. And the only way we can really know the truth is to record all our spending as we spend it. And then we can understand, at the end of 30 days, we can look back and we can say, okay, where are we actually spending our money? What is our money habits? And then we can start to make adjustments and make decisions around that. So that's where the challenge came from.
Okay, so that's part of the art of mind over money. You have to know where the money's going, or you haven't got a hope of having your mind over money, have you?
Well, that's right. We can put in place wonderful investment opportunities. We could be having all this intention to give all this money away or do these wonderful things, and yet if we don't know where we're spending our money, it's just a pipe dream, or it's going to be something that's actually going to collapse and fall apart. And if we're overspending, which a lot of people were doing once we found that the spending challenge had been completed, people were spending more than they're earning, then the only place that they can spend more than they earn is by using debt. And debt erodes our wealth.
Okay, well, now you actually have, as a part of some resource available to people, a very, very small and I'm sure inexpensive booklet called the 30-Day Spending Challenge. So how does it actually work? How do you do it? Just in a nutshell, what would you do if you had this? And you could even do this at home without your booklet, but how do you do it?
Yeah, so just a small notepad that people could grab from the news agency. The reason we use a notepad and we don't do it electronically is because most people carry their phone around them every day. And so when they're spending, they're not necessarily reminded to record that spending. So the idea behind the spending diary was that it's kind of an annoyance in your pocket. you'll remember it's there. And then when you're making spending decisions, you can either keep the receipt so you can record it there later on, or you can record it as you're going. So it's just a little diary that's just... The intention is to record the spending over a 30-day period for all spending that happens. Now,
Obviously, a lot of your people's spending these days can be recorded through bank accounts, so we can go back through a bank account statement and pick up on that. So the diary is really designed to pick up on cash spending for those people who are using cash. So if people are using a the online you know, debit cards and things like that, clearly their spending will be noted down in their statement, and they can go back and review that.
Darren, let's pause and take another call. Ian is in Leeton. Hello, Ian. Welcome along.
Hi there. How are you?
Very well, Ian. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree totally with the concept of tithing and recording. But back to the model, banking models. I actually got out of that banking model because of the complexity of trying to keep a track on so many different accounts. The model, you know, I think you've got to have a basics of that you spend less than you earn, and if you don't record, you're not aware of your spending and your earning. So if you've got some sort of track of what you earn compared to what you spend is mandatory as far as I'm concerned.
Ian, good thoughts. Let's get a response from Darren.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ian, on those last comments about making sure that you've got a margin, as I'd call it. Without a margin, there's no mission, they say, in our time and as well as our money. So definitely we need to be spending less than we earn and doing something with a difference, something wise. I think the bank account structure, the reason why it works for me is that I've renamed all my accounts. My bank allows me to name my accounts, and so I can actually designate them with emergency fund, holiday account, car account, giving account, and so it makes it very clear for me. So that's something that, you know, if your bank doesn't allow that, then I'd suggest changing banks.
Okay, Ian, thank you so much for your call. I imagine it's a little easier to do things electronically because before the electronic banking, you probably had to work with a spreadsheet for all those accounts, and you just about had to have a degree in accounting to be able to make that work, Darren.
And the time and effort it took, Neil, to manage money that way, people just don't have that time today. And when it takes that time and effort, people give up on it very easily. Again, so this is the whole idea behind mind over money, is to have what I call mechanical disciplines in place. So have money transferred into bank accounts that kind of assure our budget's going to actually work. So we have all these automatic things happening for us. Once we've set up our plan, we then set everything into automation, so that we don't have this requirement of discipline all the time.
And if the bank is helping you get those things sorted, then you should take advantage of that new technology. Thank you so much to Ian from Leeton. We're running short of time. I wanted to ask you about issues to do with share markets. Because coming to the latter part of the year, oftentimes, and people might be able to identify when share markets often have a crash. But you've got some thoughts in your new book called God's Money Matters of how the attitudes of Christian believers go. And particularly when we're talking about this issue of the art of mind over money, of how you deal with the ups and downs in the share market. What are your thoughts for listeners who might have shares?
Yeah, I think the fundamental thing, Neil, is people forget why we should be buying shares. And we buy shares, I believe, the main reason we should be buying shares is for long-term passive income. And they're a very good source of that. So long-term income that we don't actually have to go out there and earn. So when we're buying a share on the share market, we're buying a share of a company, a much larger company, and that company generates income. And particularly in Australia, this is very advantageous for us. And so if we're buying for income and we're focused on the income, not the capital value of the share, then it's much less emotional ride when things change, like the market goes down. The saying that I have is this: we should be buying our shares monthly if we can. So we should be setting aside money on a monthly basis and buying them every month if we can. And when the share market goes down, we buy more.
Okay. So when the share price is lower, that's the time to be investing in those shares. I imagine you've still got to look at the fundamental basics of the viability of the company you're investing in, but that's a part of a research, isn't it?
That's right. So either do that or just buy index funds. And so don't worry about just buy where you get 200 of the top Australian shares.
just buy the index fund. It just covers the whole index and you're not having to do research on individual shares, or do the research for sure. But when the market goes down, that should be an opportunity to buy. And when the market goes up, that's just an opportunity just to sit there and watch it go up. Alternatively, if you've got the funds, continue to accumulate. Because every time we buy a share, we're buying a small portion of passive income. And so many people watch the share price, and that's not important. Not really, not over the short term. What's important is long-term passive income. And the share market is one of the best sources for that.
Helping you make sense of life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Our special guest this hour, Darren Laudenbach, who is founder of God's Money Matters. And his new book is called God's Money Matters, Biblical Keys to Financial Freedom and the Art of Mind Over Money. Darren, just in these last few minutes for our conversation, let's come back to your book, because in some sense this is a labor of love that you have done to create a book that contains really practical, down-to-earth wisdom on a Christian, biblical way of looking at money. The inspiration, of course, for this is so that people can get a hold of these very important principles and at an inexpensive price.
Yeah, that's the idea, Neil. And the idea was to share it with the faith community, try to give a different view to what the culture gives, try to give God's view in a modern context about how we use our money. And I'm a very rubber hits the road kind of person, so it's not a very long book, as you've noticed, and it's very practical. It's really down to earth about what we should do. So it does give the principles that I believe from the Bible and the verses from the Bible that are the guiding light, and then it says, well, what do we do about it today?
And in the book, you've got budgets, forms, and all sorts of things that just help for individuals and for families to get their finances on track.
That's right, and there's a whole bunch of links within the book to take people to the website that will help them for free access some of these tools electronically, and so that way they can use them year after year. They don't have to write in the book necessarily, and they can use the tools that are the electronic calculators and the like, and there's a bunch of other resources there that are for free.
And I just have opened up at page 24. It's going to be a worry here, Darren. There's a homework page. You're saying to people, this is where you get to actually interact with your own thoughts as you're reading through this material. You want people to write down some issues, the situation and the why. And so you're helping people to think through their own financial issues.
Yeah, I think it's very important that, you know, one of the strange concepts that people look at me, well, they look at me strangely when I say, have you prayed over your budget? You know, have you thought about whether God's involved in your money decisions? You know, have you got a God-honoring money spending system? So this is just to try to engage people's minds, not in a difficult way. None of it's very hard. I'm a pretty simple kind of guy, so it can't be that hard. And it's just a matter of, you know, helping it be personalised for people. And you know, it is a personal thing before God, how we manage his resources. And so that's what I try to help people with.
And interestingly, you can wander down the aisle of a mainstream secular bookstore and you can find all sorts of books about money. But on this program, as we've talked about in past times, the idea of having God's wisdom on money is an incredible blessing, because, and it's not just for some people who just think, oh, we're going to be talking about tithing, but the idea of having a Christian biblical attitude to money actually is an invitation for God's blessing. How do you describe that to people when they're sort of saying, oh, all the church wants is my money, and that's what you're going to be talking about is tithing? I know that's a big question, but in a nutshell, what are your thoughts for people about God's blessing on you?
Yeah, it's interesting. When we start to line up God's will for us in our lives, in all aspects of our life, we're blessed in wonderful ways. And I think this is just one other way. I mean, God knows that God didn't create the man-money system. He didn't swap time for money and stuff like that. His providence is much, it works in multiplication. It doesn't work in increments. So he doesn't work in this kind of system, but he does bless people who work within the money system that we have. And if, when we get this right, it gives us freedom. You know, it's really important. I mean, John Wesley again said the four things that we should think about when it comes to money is we should provide for our family. We should be number two, content.
We should owe no man anything, and we should do good to all people, especially believers. And so that's, if we get that right, there's a freedom around that, there's a lightness around that, there's a joy around that. Whereas a lot of people, their finances always seem to be a burden, and I think it can be a freedom thing.
And you've just given a wonderful description of what it looks like for a Christian to be managing their finances. Some wonderful stuff in there. I want to point people to where they can get a hold of your new book. There is a website, godsmoneymatters.com, but if you're used to buying books on Amazon, simply go to Amazon and type in a search engine, God's Money Matters, and you'll come up with Darren Lautenbach's book. He is the founder of God's Money Matters. It is his brand new book. And just a quick mention one more time for the proceeds from this book, Darren, going to one of your favourite charities, and that being Compassion.
Yeah, it is. So I just felt compelled to that. One of my heart's desires is that this book would be would go to those in the faith community. They would get financially free and equipped to be able to run their finances better, and at the same time that we'd be able to give a lot more to Compassion, and beyond what I could imagine. And that's my dream, that would happen, that we'd be able to give an amazing amount of money through to Compassion through things like this book. Yeah.
The book's called God's Money Matters, Biblical Keys to Financial Freedom and the Art of Mind Over Money. And that website, godsmoneymatters.com, and you can get a hold of the book through Amazon. Darren, just great catching up once again, and we'll do this again another day sometime soon, but thank you so much for being with us on 2020.
Yeah, thanks again, Neil. Appreciate it.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.